Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Namassami. So contemplating today what I'm going to talk about this evening, to try and inspire, elucidate, encourage, take away a few obstacles from the path, so everybody here, the monks, the novices, the bhikkhunis, the seminaries, the anagarikas, the laymen, everybody, can actually to benefit from this beautiful path of Buddhism. And one of the reasons I do this is because my own benefit has been enormous from this path. It's created so much happiness and peace. And I just wanted to focus today on just the cultivation of the happiness part of the path. Because without that happiness part of the path, sometimes people can think too much, get into negativity, even leave the monastery and just do stupid things. And it's also that the cultivation of joy is actually something where, despite what I always say about doing nothing, letting things be, that I think is something we should be looking at to make sure we're cultivating it. We're making it appear, making it greater, making it occur more often. Okay, to cultivate it, you can put some effort and energy in, but too much effort and energy, again, makes you just really disappointed when it doesn't work. So it's a case of like using the wisdom, the skillful effort, in order to generate sort of happiness in this path. Because it's an old teaching, one which when I first saw it really hit me. And of course I remembered it immediately, and those who've been living with me for 22 years, whenever Ajahn Bhavani and Ajahn Appi, you've heard this so many times. That's also what's his name? Amandus, yes. I don't know why he hasn't become a monk yet after all these years. Nevertheless, it's nice to have him here. But anyway, all these people have been staying here for a while. I've heard it so many times. A very simple Pali phrase, Sukhino Chittang Samadhiyati. Sukhino means from happiness. It's the genitive. You know, from happiness, from that as the cause, that as the source, the mind, the jitta, becomes still, gets into samadhi. Sukhino chittang samadhiyati. From happiness, the mind becomes still. So, those of you who want to have still minds, who want to be peaceful, who want to actually to get this mind into deep states of peace, even jhana, is a very clear, precise, simple meditation teaching. Develop some happiness. The problem comes is, yeah, when we first start a meditation retreat, many people are happy, yeah, all the work is over, now I don't have to do anything, woohoo, just in my hut for don't know how many weeks. But you already see that people are looking for work to do, doing stuff, and just organizing stuff, and I don't know what else you're doing. But it seems to be that when we do have some opportunity for peace, we just keep throwing it away. When we do have the opportunity to meditate, oh, maybe we could have done it a bit more diligently. Because in the early years when I was a teacher, when I would do the interviews for people, especially after they did their personal retreats, I don't know how many times they said this. So how was your retreat? Oh, just such a shame it was only 14 or 15 days. I was just getting into it when it finished. So I gave them another week. How did it go? Oh, well, actually, just 3 weeks. Just at the end of the 3 weeks, I was just getting into it. Doesn't matter how long you have. Why is it just at the end you're always just getting into it, just when it's finished? Why can't you get into it in the beginning? And you can see one of the reasons why is we don't create that happiness, or if there is any happiness there, we take it for granted. And often I've sat in this chair and said, look, these are beautiful monasteries we're living in. Just before some interviews this afternoon, I was walking my meditation path, just enjoying the view of the forest from my walking meditation path, just, you know, in about 5:30 in the evening time, because the light is actually fantastic on the forest in the evening time, just before sunset. You know, the golden light from the sun on the green forest looks delicious. And so I was just really enjoying that. There's so much beauty to be found in the forest, in this situation we're in here. And for those people who come and visit, oh, of course they just love coming here, sometimes even on the weekend. So why don't you go to Dhammaloka Centre? It's so easy for you to get to. No, they prefer coming here because it's more beautiful. And they say it's more peaceful. More peaceful at lunchtime? It's the noisiest time of the day in this place. So it is noisy at lunchtime here, but nevertheless, for many people, it's beautiful and it's peaceful. And it was a case that for a long time, I've lived here longer than anybody in this place, and I've got to remind myself how peaceful it is, how beautiful it is. It just reminded me that when my poor mother, after my father died, it's a good idea to move, to let go of some of the old memories so she wouldn't get so sad. And we moved into this tower block of apartments, 14th floor, these amazing views over London. Big picture window, incredibly beautiful views for 1 week. And then we stopped looking out of the window anymore, preferred actually looking at the TV, drawing the blinds. It's true, because after 1 week you got used to it. And all the visitors would come and open the blinds, the curtains, and have a look at the views. And, oh, it's amazing views. Oh, yeah. Because you got used to it. And that's the same in this monastery here. Sometimes after, how many weeks have we been going now? 4 weeks? Five? 5 weeks, yeah. After 5 weeks, so easy to get used to this place, to take it for granted. So what we need to do is actually deliberately look for the happiness. To make a resolution. I am going to go for a walk in Bodhinyana Monastery or in Jhana Grove, and what am I going to look for? I'm going to look for beauty, happiness, joy. Go and look for a beautiful flower which is coming up, or the freesias which are very fragrant and the path into Jhana Grove now. Go and just get out there at the sunset and watch the sun go down, which is gorgeous over the ocean. Go and look for some Joey jumping out of the mother's pouch for the first time. Go and just look for something which is gorgeous and beautiful, which is so much of it is here. What that actually does is allows you to develop this perception of the beautiful instead of the perception of the negative, the faults, which is just so easy. Because out there in the big bad world, that's what people always do. So fault-finding, always complaining about the government, the economy, the, I don't know, marriages, the children, the parents, the weather, the everything. And that just really, that actually pulls people down when it's always complaining. You know what it's like when they complain about you? It just really pulls you down. You praise you, and that really lifts you up, and you've got some happiness, some energy. So this is actually where we go out looking for the positive, for the beautiful in this monastery. And just that much, it's incredible how that will improve your meditation. When you're looking for joy, you're not just going out there thinking about what you're going to do after the rains retreat, planning this, writing your autobiography, or whatever else goes up in your mind, writing a steamy novel. I don't know what you get up to, but you don't do things like that. You just go out there and look at the beautiful part of nature, because it is a beautiful time of the year. you know, it's cold some mornings, so just go out in the afternoon and have a look around. Look at the lakes, look at the sort of the water in the streams. It's very beautiful. Especially, you know, those in Jhana Grove, you know, before when Kinabija was around, he put up all these signs, monks' areas, so you couldn't go down past his hut. Now he's gone, you can go there. There's always advantages somewhere on the line. Every sort of cloud has a silver lining, and that's a silver lining. And go and find Ajahn Brahmani's bridge over the lake there. Because I remember just going to check it out one day, I think it was last year. And I just, it was so beautiful there, I just couldn't go any further. I sat down in the middle of the bridge for about half an hour, not meditating, just watching the water there. It was just idyllic. I mean, it was idyllic, it was just beautiful. And that kept me going for weeks, just the beauty of that. So when you go looking for the beauty in nature, it really satisfies the mind. It is food for the heart. And the heart perks up, the mind gets energy, the mind feels positive, the mind gets some joy and happiness in it. So that means that afterwards, when you go back to the room or go to the hall or walk meditation, straight away you've got this happiness, this joy. From happiness, the mind is easily stilled. The opposite, if you dwell in negativity, nobody likes me, I'm really hopeless, I'm terrible, 5 weeks and I haven't got third jhana yet, I'm terrible. It's amazing how people can get so negative even when they're going really, really well. And I mentioned that and said, someone's got third jhana, I haven't got even meditation on the breath, I'm not even on stage one. Yeah. So we can get so negative about ourselves and about life. So we develop this beautiful, positive nature. And then when you've got that happiness, that smile inside of you, it will get so easy to meditate. And especially those of you on retreats, we all have our time to go on retreats. If your meditation is not going so well, you can get really down. Oh God, another, how many more days to go before the Patimokkha? I'm not going to last. This is terrible. What did I do this for? Can't we do something else instead of retreats? So when you get negative like that, there's no way you're going to meditate. If you do, you're just going to, the negativity is just going to keep on going. You find escapes from that negativity, fantasies, doing stuff, reading books, whatever it is, all just escapes because the mind is negative and you can't stand it, fair enough. But use another technique. Just look for the beauty in life. Well, that's one way of developing this happiness. You know, one of the other ones, which is very, I do this a lot, I must admit, I reflect on my companions in the holy life. All of the monks I am privileged to live with, all the novices, every last one of you, the Anagarikas, all the nuns over at Jhana Grove, the lay visitors who come here, I really respect you. Honestly, I'm not just saying that. It is amazing, just the high quality of people. I see the amazing stuff inside of you. That's what I see, because I've been a monk a long time. I've learned how to do that. And that inspires me, that 2,500 years after the passing away of the Buddha, in a country which is a long way from India, which is culturally very, very different than Asia, that there are people ordaining men and women, supporting the Sangha, living this life. And for me to get sort of really teary, I just look at all the people who come every day and give alms food. These people, and people have been coming today. These are people, Doi. She was feeding me 32 years ago, every week. And she lived in to the other side of Burke Street in North Perth. And that's why her daughter was there today, Tom. And two of them, we walked there from Magnolia Street. It's a nice half an hour, 45 minute walk. And she put rice and this, it was just like a mincemeat sort of dish. Every week was the same, it was delicious. I didn't complain. And that was all we had that day. And it was delicious. Every day she would do that. And now, look how old she is. Always complaining about the cold. And said, my why, which means I can't bear this cold much longer. But still she comes every week. She's doing this for 32, 33 years. Now that is really, really brings, you know, real joy to my heart to know that that happens. That is out there for you to see, to contemplate, to actually allow the mind to start settling on that, contemplating it, turn it round and round in your mind. So keep that instead of some fantasy or some negativity. Get that sort of inspiration coming up. Because when the mind gets inspired, it's a free form of happiness. It's always there for you to remember, to think about. That this is actually happening and you're part of this. And that makes such a beautiful, happy heart. Again, go down and sit down on your bum and whoa, you get meditation so quickly, so beautifully. I used to, you know, do this in Thailand, but my inspiration often came just, you know, seeing my fellows in the monastic life, seeing that actually we were actually living just exactly, or not exactly, but pretty much as I read about in the suttas, in the Vinaya, read those books, we're actually living this, doing it. That was amazing. It's not just reading it as if it was some archaic picture from the past. We were right inside of it, doing it, practicing it. And that was inspiring. And every now and again you get someone giving a talk and it really reached your heart. I got some incredible meditations after great Dhamma talks. Especially, you know, I learned Thai. The first few years I couldn't understand a word which Ajahn Chah was saying. And you'd sit there, and not for just an hour, for 3 or 4 hours, not understanding a word of what was going on. Craving to get to the toilet, your back aching, your knees aching. It was really, they called it toroman, torture. I don't know why they did that for us, it's absolutely stupid. But it was worth it, because after a while I learned Thai and Lao. And you can listen to what Ajahn Chah said, and sometimes, wow, that really got to you. And sometimes you started crying. I was saying that to someone after their interview, sometimes they cry, you know, when they get happy. That used to happen to me here once. It was one of the monks, visiting monks, came and gave a talk, and I was just crying, just the tears coming down my cheeks. It was beautiful Dhamma. And I always remember the monk saw that. He opened his eyes and saw me with 2 lines coming out of my eyes down my cheeks. And he looked at me and said, you enjoyed that talk, didn't you? I said, yeah. So he was happy and I was happy. I really got what he was saying. It's nice stuff. So anyway, you get that inspiration. I remember that time. Well, it's an old story, but it comes up. And it's why not put it in right now. This is a brilliant story. Ajahn Chah came to Nana Chat, gave a talk, and then he went for his sauna. About an hour and a half talk, wow, sometimes really hits the spot. And I was just flying after that talk. That was a juicy talk. That was just one of the best. Well, no, I don't know if it was ever recorded or translated, but I don't know. But I was just flying after that talk. And your job, you know, as a young monk, I'm supposed to be like attendant to these my teachers. But there's other attendants. I let them mess around. I went to the back of the hall, sat on the concrete, like going back to my hut, I'd lose the energy. And I couldn't sit in the hall, there's too many people there. Right in the back of the hall where no one could see me, sat down, didn't need a cushion or a mat or anything. That would take too much time. I didn't want to spoil the energy. Sat down, crossed my legs, and wow, that was a really juicy meditation. You can do that because inspiration is so happy. And just watch the breath came to you, it was joy all over the place, nimittas, the works, just a wonderful time. But that was the time afterwards. I came out of meditation, haven't got a clue, didn't care how much time it was, no one was around. And just what happens, just thoughts come up. No, really good thoughts, never any negative thoughts after a good meditation, a very simple thought, I should go and do a duty to my teacher. He gave me all this energy, I got a payback. So I got up, walked towards the sauna, and actually I was too late. Well, actually I was perfectly on time for what was going to happen. Because then Ajahn Chah. I'm visualizing it now. It's one of these occasions which you'll never forget. And he was coming with, I can't remember, it was one or two Thai lay people. They were his drivers. They were going to take him back to his monastery. It's a narrow path. You couldn't avoid him. So I came close to him, just was going to step past on the path, but he stopped me. He stopped right in front of me and looked at me straight in the eyes. And, you know, the monks, they can read your mind if they want to. But the point was that, you know, that if you had so much peace and happiness, number one, there was no hindrances were there. So you could feel him getting inside of you. And if you've got hindrances around, your mind isn't clear, maybe you either block him, or you're not sensitive enough to let somebody in and let them have a look at your mind. Because it wasn't a sense I was proud that my mind was nice and free, but it's just so relaxed. Come in and have a look. And that's, you could feel him inside of you, his mind reading my mind. And then afterwards, that's when he looked at me, and, being serious. Brahma Wangso, why? He barked at me, Brahma Wangso, why? And he was really serious. He respected that my mind was clear, and that maybe I could get something out of this peaceful mind. And I was so stupid, a really young, stupid monk. How many years? That was about 7 or 8 years as a monk. But, just because you're 7 or 8 years as a monk doesn't mean you're wise. I was stupid. Good meditation, but it's just still real stupid. And so I said, I don't know. Simple like that, my loo, crap. I don't know. And that's when Ajahn Chah, and I tell this, but this is so true, real teachers never get upset or angry at you. Real monks never get angry. Real nuns never get angry. Instead, they find it so funny, just the stupidity of samsara. Just how things can be so obvious, but people can't see them. So he just laughed his head off. He thought it was so funny that these Westerners who are supposed to be so highly educated can be so dumb. And I was one of the dumbest. And he looked at me and just laughed. And then he stopped laughing and screwed his face up again. And then thought, this is going to be interesting. What's going to happen next? And that's when he said, Brahma Wangso, I will tell you the answer. Oh, wonderful. This was a great monk. One-on-one, personal teaching. The sorts of thing which, you talk about writing the books, which is really gets to you, because this is not what you see in the suttas. This is really right to the point, one-on-one. And he asked me, I'll tell you the answer. He said, yes, yes. The answer is, there's nothing. In Thai, it is my, me, or I. There's nothing. So simple. No original mind, no ground of all being, no God, no soul, nothing. Absolutely nothing. There's nothing. That's the answer to the question, why? There's nothing. Not 42, which is the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The answer is nothing. And that's when he looked at me again. He was just full of hope, Ajahn Chah. We disappointed him so many times. This was one of those times. I don't know why he didn't give up on us. And he said, do you understand? I said, yes. And he said, no, you don't. And he was so high, and he just fell down right to where you belonged, in the base of the barrel. And he walked off. It's such a wonderful memory, that, because it's just beautiful teacher-student sort of interchange. But it was so powerful. I think the reason he told me that, because one day I might remember it and understand it. It's nothing. But the point was, it was just that the happiness of inspiration. I made use of that. And that meant my mind was really free and peaceful, and that was open for insight. Yeah, I never got it at the time, but then you sort of remember that, and that was, wow, brilliant teachings. absolutely accurate, true, wonderful. So he develops the happiness. And one of the other, talking at just a few minutes ago about happiness, one of the other causes of happiness is one's conduct. It's because I was writing about this, I was translating for the Word of the Buddha class, you know, getting ahead of myself so I can actually get it all translated or ready, so if anyone wants to see it before the class they can, instead of me just doing it an hour before I actually talk about it. The last part of that Word of the Buddha class is a gradual training. And that gradual training was first taught by the Buddha for King Ajatasattu. It's called the Samanyapala, the fruit of this life. Because this king, first time he saw the Buddha, said, "What are you doing this for? What is the purpose of being a monk or a nun? Or even what is the purpose of spending 3 months or 8 days, however long, in a monastery? What are you doing this for?" And the Buddha said, "For happiness." And the king couldn't believe it. He said, "Oh, come on. It's more happiness in the palace. I've got a harem. I can eat whenever I like, whatever I want. I can listen to music. Just, I've got all the happiness of a monarch. What have you got? You've got no money, no food, nothing." And that's when the Buddha explained the happiness of this path. And again, that really sort of, I took to that because it was showing that this path is a path of greater and greater and greater happiness. Increases. This is the fruits of the monastic path, if you walk that path properly. And saying the first fruit is, you know, you get inspiration, but also you start to keep your precepts for the sake of happiness. And of course that hit you, first of all, because I always thought I was understood as a rebellious teenager that keeping rules and regulations was stopping you being happy. Break the rules and have some fun. Don't sort of do what your parents tell you to. That's stopping you enjoying yourself. And at first, you know, this, what? You mean you keep all these rules and you have more fun? Yeah. And that was amazing to first of all consider, test out, and prove to be so absolutely true. You know, monks, nuns, compared to the average lay person out there, who's happiest? That's why the people invite me to go all over the place. Because sometimes they say, "Well, you're happy. We want to know why." Why people in this monastery are happy most of the time, especially the ones that, the more you get up the line, the happier you are. Why? One of the reasons is because you keep these beautiful precepts. You know, you're not harming, you're not hindering, you're not causing any problem to people, to animals, to life. It's such a happy thing to keep precepts. Just to be people who don't like and trust one another. And don't have all these problems of lack of trust and lack of care and saying rotten things to each other like you get over in the world. You know, that we're not supposed to say harsh words to one another. That's a harsh speech. It's again, it's one of the omosawade, one of the precepts. We're not supposed to actually to put down anybody, bhikkhu pe sunye. We don't criticize people. We don't put them down. We don't say rotten things about them. We have this beautiful speech which always forgives people and looks at their best qualities. We're not in this to point out people's faults. And I read out the last Saturday in the Word of the Buddha, 10 things you've got to consider before you point out somebody's faults. 10 things. And a lot of them you can't get past number one. It's all crocky. I've got some work to do before I start criticizing other people. And that's there's a point to that. But you don't have to consider anything, not 10 things, not 5 things, not 1 thing, to praise a person. The Buddha never said, make sure you consider all these things before you praise somebody. You can do that straight away. And to tell a person just how what a wonderful person they are, and thank you for being here, thank you for your help. You don't have to consider anything to praise people, but you do have to consider before you criticize people. You do that and it makes a happier place. And you find that when you follow those precepts and you live your life according to those precepts, you have this beautiful happiness comes up. And it's a happiness which is constant. Sometimes you don't recognize it yourself, no more than you recognize yourself growing older every day. See yourself in the mirror today, tomorrow, the next day, and you can't see the change. Other people do. And other people see the happiness which comes when monks, nuns keep their precepts. Just being good, kind, gentle, harmless beings. It's much deeper than that, because whenever you get into these really powerful meditations, I always notice this was great insight. It's not mentioned in the suttas. They don't say enough about nimittas in the suttas, but you know, when you're getting these nimittas coming up, you know, sometimes you find out that, you know, in these early days, that some of them were a bit scratchy, a bit dirty, a bit soiled. You know, just like a tea towel which has got a bit of dirt on it, instead of one which has been freshly washed. And when I saw that, I thought, where did this come from? And then you reflected, and, oh crikey, I know why. You know, you weren't that kind to someone. You were a bit slack with your precepts, especially with your speech. And I looked at those, and my goodness, your actions of body and speech, they're actually get imprinted on your mind, because when you see that nimitta, what you're seeing is a reflection of your citta, of your mind. That's what it is. Just like you look in the mirror in the morning to brush your teeth, and you know what you're looking at there is a reflection of this face, you know, your head. And that's actually what the nimitta is like. You're looking at the reflection of your mind. And any little dirt or stain on there is obviously usually from your precepts being a bit defiled. When you say these things are defilements, a lot of times we say it's defilements. Wanting, ill will, bad speech, stupidity, it's delusion, it's a defilement. But what does it defile? It's actually a very good word, accurate, because it defiles the citta, and that's actually what you perceive. Right in your image of your mind, the nimitta, sometimes it's just a bit yucky, a bit dirty, like it needs a wash. And that is, you know, to me, that was really clear evidence. I was going to say black and white, and it's more like grey and white. You know, you see the grey part in you. Never it was that bad as being black. But you can see the sort of that, how it soils the mind and stops it being clear. Actually, it does say that in the suttas. The mind, the citta, is pabbasara. That pabbasara citta, you read the context, the pabbasara citta, the clear, radiant mind, when it is free from defilements. Because that's a thing you see, not you figure out. It's not a concept, it's a direct experience. When you see you haven't broken your precepts, and then when a nimitta comes up, oh, it's gorgeous. Beautiful and radiant and full of happiness. Because you've been keeping precepts. And the other form of happiness in that Samanyapala Sutta, before you get into the jhanas, which is the big stuff, is the sense restraint. And sometimes I don't talk enough about restraint, but, you know, being restrained, saying no to an extra cake, you know, when you're having your food. The saying no to, you know, whatever else, you know, your little tricks of having happiness and fun during the range retreats, your little indulgences. Sometimes saying no to them. Oh, that's going to really cause me lots of unhappiness. I can't do this. I can't do that. It's just too much. You don't have to give up all your indulgences, but just give up one and see what happens afterwards. you get a boost of happiness. Amazing, but it's true. Sense restraint. Don't go looking at things which create lust or ill will. Don't go looking at remembering people's past bad actions. We all make mistakes, we all learn. Don't look at that part. If you do that, you're creating sort of lack of happiness in you. Restrain that part of the senses and develop the senses which can see and forgive a person, can see their good part, to see just how much work they do, how devoted they are. Just, you know, bend the way you look at people to see their goodness and beauty and their kind part. Restrain yourself from focusing and dwelling on their faults. Yeah, those faults are there, but it's not for you to dwell on them. It's for you, your job is to dwell on their beautiful parts. That's called restraint, sense restraint. Thinking. And if you're going to think of beautiful thoughts. Think of your enlightenment. Who knows when it's going to happen? Think of just amazing stuff which, you know, this monastery does. Think of just the future of Buddhism in this world. Now, whatever it is, you're going to think of stuff. Think of good stuff. That's like when I do have dreams, you know what I keep dreaming of? Like psychic powers and fighting the baddies with my psychic powers. They're great dreams sometimes, really weird, but good fun. Flying through the air and zapping people and stopping villains and stuff. Really good. I don't know if that's inspiring or not, but I don't know. Indulging, maybe. Anyway, back to the getting some happiness coming up. Then you get some happiness coming up because you're restraining your senses. You feel more free. And sometimes if you don't restrain, it's like you have all these burdens and all these memories and these plans and stuff. Oh, it just, you know, just drags your mind down. When people complain you've got too much to do, it's like you've got too much to think about. You don't have too much you have to think about. You just put those burdens on yourself. Just do you do your job in the kitchen and then afterwards stop thinking about it. Go back to your room and just bliss out. You've done a great job. Well done. Now you're free. Not many people have so much freedom just to meditate or to rest or go for a walk all afternoon and evening and early morning time. Totally free. Woohoo. Enjoy it. And restrain the senses from negativity and from lust. Anything which really takes you out of this present moment and stops you really enjoying the peace and the happiness of peace. And when you start developing happiness like that, again, Sukhino Chittang Samadhiyati, the mind really goes off into really great meditations, and then you really get going. Then you just can't resist the happiness. And you're just having a beautiful time. And that's what, of course, you know, I wish everybody to really bliss out into these deep meditations where you feel so totally free of all the burdens of life. Because life can be so heavy. All the responsibilities you're supposed to do. I don't know who says you have to do them, but you don't. It's great, you've got a great excuse now. You're a monk, you're a nun. You don't have to worry about your family. You don't have to sort of do too much. It's range retreat. What a great excuse for doing little. And so make use of those beautiful excuses so that you can have a peaceful time. And from peace, again, that's the other source of energy. After a while, because you're inspired, you don't need to think looking for some happiness. Because you're keeping precepts, you know, you're blameless. And because you're restrained, you don't have so much to think about, to worry about. Which means your poor brain has a real retreat. And that's just simply a great cause of happiness. the more you think, the more you have to use your brain, the less happiness it has. It's just tired, worn out, too much action on this poor brain. And you leave it alone for a while, let it relax and rest, and it starts to become joyful and bubble up. It's just the happiness when all the energy just goes into the mind, into the knowing, and not into the doing. And if you haven't got that happiness coming up yet, the happiness which really gets you into good samadhi, it means you're still doing too much. Giving too much energy to the doer, not enough to the knower. Very beautiful, powerful teaching. See that so clearly. So I try my best just to do nothing, as little as possible, so my brain gets a good rest, so the knower gets all the energy, mindfulness increases, and of course it's so easy to see beauty when your mindfulness is very strong. Just like the beautiful piece of shit story, which I'm not going to repeat, but it's a classic. Everything looks beautiful. That's why when you do have a good meditation, you go out of your hut or your... Oh, just life is just so incredibly beautiful and wonderful. Because the energy is in the mind. That's a real energy, the virya, which is going to get you going into deep meditations. That's the energy I had when I met Ajahn Chah. It was just amazing, just bliss, beauty, happiness. That's the energy which Ajahn Chah saw could open for enlightenment. I wasn't so stupid. So, this is where we start to get energy in our meditation and happiness. And of course, when you have that happiness, you're just having a great time during the range retreat, great time as a monk, great time as a nun, and you become inspiring for other people. Because when our visitors come, if they see miserable monks, the monks are always complaining, monks are always there. You wonder why people come and feed you. So give them a smile, give them some happiness, especially real genuine happiness. And those lay people who come and feed us, they know what's going on. It's incredible just how how sort of sensitive and wise they are. And so when you're really buzzing along and happy, they know that, and that gives them so much joy. They are feeding monks and nuns, novices, even lay people who are doing the job. And they can see that in the twinkle in your eye, in the peace, in the happiness. So that's your gift to our supporters. Yeah, you can teach some Dhamma, but quite frankly, there's so much Dhamma available. What people really like to see is the result that actually works. Happy monks, happy nuns, peaceful, really getting into it, joyful. Now that is inspiring, and that is one of the greatest gifts we can do. So, see if you can push up the happiness, push up the joy, be inspired, look for it, develop it, let it grow, and then keep the precepts. You can always do better, I can always do better. You can always, don't give up everything all at once, because sometimes people, they just say, right, that's it. I'm not going to eat anymore. I'm not going to sleep at night. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. They just go over the top. Just do it gradually, okay? Just a little bit. Because that's also all ego when they think, right, this is it. I'm not going to sleep again. I'm going to sit down and even my bones turn to dust and my blood dries up tonight. Right, this is it. That was absolutely crazy. That's what I did once. Absolutely crazy. I lasted 40 minutes. I thought I was going to die. Never got enlightened. There's so much ego and willpower, just hopeless. But anyway, just little by little, you get some more happiness coming up, joy coming up. Never sort of say a bad thing about anybody. Just always see their kind parts. They're all learning. We'll start from different places. Give everyone a break. Give yourself a break too. And you get this happiness coming up. When the joy comes up, the happiness comes up. Sukhino cittaṃ samādhiyati. And the mind is happy. It's just so easy to meditate. So many of you are just having a hard time, just another 7 weeks to go. Create some happiness, plenty around there. And then you find you can sit down and it works. It's not willpower. Willpower just won't cut it. Happiness does. And that's the talk for this evening.